Close your eyes. Your eyes can deceive you. We must not trust them. Tell me what comes into your mind.
Life. Balance.
I see fire.
Someone is killing Jedi. It doesn't make sense.
What happened?
I sensed darkness.
This isn't about good or bad. This is about power, and who is allowed to use it.
What is that?
Welcome, everyone, from across the universe to the Wampa's Lair podcast. Star Wars is for everyone, so pull up a chair, get comfortable, and join the conversation with your hosts, Carl LeClaire and Jason Hunt, here in the Wampa's Lair.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to another exciting episode of the Wampa's Lair podcast, part of the Thunderquack Podcast Network. This is episode number 550, the Acolyte trailer. I'm, as always, one of your hosts, Jason Hunt, and with me, the Sando Aqua Monster and Colo Clawfish. To my gooberfish, we have Carl LeClaire and Joe Hogan.
There's always a bigger fish.
Break our teeth!
That was the only thing missing in the Acolyte trailer, was there wasn't enough Nabooian aquamarine animals.
Right. Colo Clawfish? Yeah.
Right. Anyone?
Yes? No?
Oh, my goodness. So we were super excited to talk about the Acolyte trailer. I had no idea this was coming out today. Until yesterday, because Joe, you sent me a quick link announcing that. Because, y'all, we were planning to talk about the Battlefront games and some of the old Phantom Menace games. That's why we wanted Joe on specifically, because Joe is much more of a video gamer than the two of us. But then when this trailer dropped, we're like, let's talk about this. So, Joe, I appreciate you being willing to just pivot to that. And this is also your second podcast on the day talking about the Acolyte.
Yeah. You don't forget it. No, of course. Like, this is on everybody's mind right now, right? Like, obviously, it's like this is the exciting thing at the moment for everybody, not just, you know, for us. Everybody's talking about this, and everybody seems to have very positive things to say, which is pretty cool.
Yeah, as long as you stay out of comment sections in social media, everybody I know of, like, as real people, are really enjoying it. So
yeah, absolutely. I mean, but, you know, that's just a blanket statement. Stay out of the comment sections. Great. On anything, you know, it doesn't matter what it is, just stay out.
If into the comments you go, only pain will you find.
100% Master Yoda.
your common sense, you will not need it.
Oh, man. All right, guys. So this trailer, I loved it. I know you loved it, Jason. Joe, I'm pretty sure you enjoyed it as well. Just quick, like, what was your just initial takeaway? I know, Joe, you already talked about it once today, but what was just kind of your initial first time watching through? What was your thought process?
Yeah, everything's exciting, right? The cinematography looks awesome. Choreography looks awesome. Story looks awesome. New characters look awesome. Everything looks Awesome. And finally, we are getting the origin story of Darth Jar Jar, guys. Let's go. It's finally time. I guarantee you we will end up back on Naboo and seeing Gooberfish when Darth Jar Jar's Sith trialist is to slay the biggest Gooberfish in the planet core. It's going to be awesome.
That's who the Acolyte is. All right, cool. That was going to be my second big question is who do we think the Acolyte is? But Joe's already answered.
Sorry. Jumped the gun a little bit.
Oh, my goodness.
There are no bad theories in Star Wars except the Darth Jar Jar one.
It is ridiculous.
And I will fight everyone on that one. I'm sorry. But I didn't mean to interrupt that. Did you have anything else you wanted to say?
No, that's it. I don't follow that theory at all. It's very silly. I know. It's very silly.
I know. But I had to put that out there. Anyways, for me, Carl, after watching the trailer, I was just very excited, much like Joe. The Jedi and all of that has always been my favorite part of Star Wars. So getting a show wrapped around, you know, the Jedi Order, you know, before the Phantom Menace, you know, we're getting to see a time period we've never been to before, with Jedi we've never met, and the fact that it's there, we got some really cool looking characters. Like Joe said, the choreography in this looks amazing so far, and we only got, you know, a couple quick shots of some of the what I'm sure will be a visual smorgasbord of fight scenes in this show. So I'm very excited. The Jedi lover in me is very, very happy with what we're getting right now. So what about you, Carl? Where was your head after watching the trailer?
The great thing about going last in a round robin like this is you just say, oh, what you guys said, which is partial. It's like I mean, just to kind of reiterate what you were saying, Jason, that was my first just initial thought, was like, yes, I love that this is such a Jedi centric story, or at least, at least it's going to be around them. Right. They clearly don't exactly reveal who in fact the Acolyte is. I have my assumptions based on what we saw in the trailer. But the majority of this, you know, minute 45 second sneak peek into this story it's really Jedi centric. And like you, Jason, that's my favorite part of Star Wars. I love the Jedi, I love the Force. So yeah, just really excited to see more about them. And there's something about the trailer too that made me just feel like, ooh, these look like really personal stories. Like they're much smaller stories. Mm-hmm. Right. And this is coming at the tail end of the High Republic. And I know we'll get into more in-depth conversation around this in a moment, but based on the interview that they published on StarWars.com today with the creator, Leslie Headland, she indicated that Vernestra Rowe is 100 years older than she was in the High Republic. So if the High Republic is 200 years before Phantom Menace, it would suffice that this is about 100 years before Phantom Menace. So I like that it's kind of coming at the tail end of that series. I personally have kind of fallen out of High Republic. I have my reasons for that I don't think need to be talked about today. But all that to say, I am excited to see kind of, again, a golden age Jedi story and seeing something disrupt that. That's really what the trailer felt like. Is I liked even just the visuals, how they go from really bright to very dark by the end. So it's very much telling us this story. This is going to be the story about quite possibly like the anti-hero type thing, right? That's who we're going to follow. Mm-hmm. That's who the Acolyte is ideally going to be. So that was kind of what I was initially thinking. I was just like, man, that was great. So yeah. Who do you guys think the Acolyte might be?
Go ahead, Joe.
Well, I just want to clarify the question. Which character, or like, what is the background of the Acolyte? Because what are you asking?
I meant like, who's the who is who? Which character is the Acolyte?
I think it's the character that was attacking Carrie Ann Moss.
Okay.
The like the young girl.
Yeah.
With the
May is her name.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. That was my assumption as well. Is that it's her? She's the acolyte, and I'm wondering if she's being used by whatever this group of people led by I forget what's her name.
Oh, Mother Anissa.
Mother Anissa.
Anissa, maybe Anissa. Yeah, I don't know. I'm probably not pronouncing it right, but yeah.
Right. Yeah. I'm wondering if she's being used because she seems very to have her as the central character. My assumption is that she is the central character of this. And I forgive me if I'm jumping a topic here, but going on the assumption that she's the central character here, it's strange if she doesn't have like an interesting character arc, if she's just out there to kill the Jedi because of some tragedy that happened to her, which I think is implied in some of, you know, we see, I believe it's her running through, you know, like an exploding forest of some sort at one point. So I'm imagining that's like a flashback to something bad that happened to her. That's the narrative that my head has wrapped around her real quick, at least at this point. I don't have enough information to know if I'm right, but this is my theory. And so, you know, my guess, something bad happened. She blames the Jedi, and then maybe she's being used by this mother character in order to fight back and hit back at the Jedi. And maybe she'll find out along the way that she's been misled about things. I don't know. But that's sort of the storyline that my head has concocted just based on the very little that we have from this trailer, which doesn't really give us enough to get us past a first episode of the series. So,
yeah, if you think about the last few years of how they've given us trailers for Star Wars projects, specifically like the television shows, it seems like the majority of trailers we get anymore, that what we see in them is usually within the first three episodes, right? We rarely get glimpses of things further on into the series. Like Ahsoka didn't really do that at all. Andor didn't do it. Kenobi didn't do it. You know, so they're really, Mandalorian Dumber does it. Like, so they do a good job of just, again, doing what a trailer ought to do, which is get us excited. So I think that's a fair bet, Jason. You know, it's funny. I mean, ever since they've announced the show, which was nearly 3 years ago now, I've loved the whole concept of the Acolyte. And it's funny because, Joe, you might recall, like, in like our church circles growing up as kids, like an acolyte was an altar server, right? Like if you were ever an altar boy or an altar girl or whatever, you know, the more formal term for that in a Christian service is an acolyte. So I just, for, you know, poodoo and giggles, I looked up like the formal definition of acolyte, and it's a quote, a person assisting the celebrant in a religious service or procession, which makes perfect sense why those are what altar servers are called in, you know, a Catholic service on a Sunday. So it's cool to me that acolyte doesn't in and of itself mean like a Sith apprentice. And kind of going to what you're saying, Jason, about like Mother Anissa, you know, could she become her acolyte? She, you know, what StarWars.com released about her today is that she is a witch in a coven of witches. So love that we're getting more witches back in Star Wars. That's awesome. Like, I loved how they expanded the Night Sister lore even more with the Ahsoka show. So this will be really cool to see. So I'm just, yeah, I can't wait to see who that acolyte is. And, you know, guys, there's that one shot kind of right towards the end of the trailer where we see May looking at somebody who's, you know, back is turned to us, standing near the ocean. And I've seen people have been calling this out all day over social media, that it looks like she could be on Octo, which would be very interesting. But I also thought, like, in that shot of what looks to be her looking at debatably a Sith Lord who's standing there by the ocean shore. There's something about his cloaks that remind me of the cloaks the Elder wore in that episode of Star Wars Visions from the first season. Remember the...
Oh, yeah.
I loved that episode where you have that old ancient Sith and he's kind of got that short robe type thing. It kind of reminded me of just that robe. Not saying it's the same thing at all, but it just made me think, ooh, maybe that's the Sith, because that visual language looks familiar to me from Star Wars Visions.
That's fair. And there was a lot of rain and water in that one, too. So that would.
Yeah, that's right.
But yeah, she could be on Octo. That's definitely a possibility, or something similar to it. But yeah, and obviously she's the one that's out there trying to kill the Jedi, and we don't know why or what that's. And I'm sure the why is going to be what's driving this story forward. And quick question. Do either of you know, because I forgot to look this up, is this supposed to be a limited run series, or is there a potential for additional seasons? Do we know?
I don't know.
I'm not sure.
I don't know. Okay. I don't know that they've said either way maybe yet. Maybe they're also going to wait and see how it does.
That's perfectly fair. It would be interesting if, you know, obviously if it's limited run like Kenobi was, or if it's like more like Ahsoka. But anyway, I just didn't know.
Yeah.
But yeah, I'm very, very excited, very curious. Where do we want to go next, Carl? Obviously, we talked about the Acolyte, but I'm sure there's a lot more that we want to tease out of this trailer.
Yeah. I mean, I like in the opening how we have Master Sol. Also, something about his character, and don't know exactly what it was, but he gave me a little bit of Qui-Gon Jinn vibes. I don't know. Maybe it's just because he's somebody who's teaching kind of, you know, in a meditative place. Just something about him gives me like a Qui-Gon vibe. But that lesson he's teaching these younglings in that opening shot, he's combining, that little scene gives us a combination of some of the very first things we ever heard about using the Force to some of the newest things, which is him giving the instruction of, don't rely on your eyes can deceive you. Do not trust them. It's one of the first lessons that, you know, Obi-Wan teaches Luke in A New Hope. And then he asks them what they see and they feel. And the first two things are life and balance, which just made me think of, you know, when Rey first touches the Force there on Octo with Luke. I appreciated the fact that they're wrapping up all this Force lore that we've actually heard in previous stories. But it makes me wonder if we'll maybe get to explore the Force more explicitly in a series like this, because, one of the things I love about the prequels is that it opens with the Jedi also seemingly in their golden age, but the Jedi we meet besides Qui-Gon are super dogmatic, right? Like that's the whole point of the Jedi in the prequel trilogy that George is telling us, is that they're flawed, they're broken. So I'm curious if a series like this, which is in fact their golden age, if we might get a little bit more exploration of what the Force is and how the Jedi relate to it. So that really grabbed me right from the get-go. Something that, again, Leslie Headland commented on in her interview that was released today is she says that Vernestra Rowe is deeply in love with the Jedi and the Force. So I was just like, oh, that's really cool. I've never heard somebody express a Jedi being in love with the Force. Like, I really like that way of thinking. So it just has me wondering if perhaps we might get a little bit more exploration of what the Force is and how the Jedi relate to it.
Yeah, Carl, go ahead.
No, go ahead.
I mean, I think in a series like this that revolves around the Jedi, you know, where we have at least 8 episodes of the series, and all of the major characters are Jedi themselves, the idea of exploring the Force in some way, it seems like a no-brainer. So I definitely think we'll get some sort of explanation or alternate look at the Force, something new it can do, something, a new understanding that somebody has of it. It would be a waste not to do something like that, especially in a series that so heavily, you know, focuses on the Jedi, I think. So what do you say, Joe?
Yeah, I agree 100%. I think it's a very, very safe bet that we will definitely get more. Carl, maybe not as much as you're hoping for, because I feel like it is going to really want to like move the plot along, especially if it does end up being a limited series. Like, they only have, you know, so much space to get things moving and keep things exciting. But honestly, if we don't get as much as you're hoping for, I think where we definitely will get that is that first Jedi film that they announced at Celebration last year.
Yep.
Just because, like, there are no lightsabers, there is no Jedi Order, there is no Sith. Technically, it's the first Jedi ever. All there is the Force. So, like, we're going to watch someone discover what it is from start to finish, really, I think, with, you know, whatever that journey turns out to be. So I think that might be the place where it gets, like, real philosophical and you know, answering questions and stuff like that. But yeah, Jason, I agree. Like, what a waste it would be if we didn't get like a decent serving of that in throughout the show. Doesn't have to be everything at once. You know, we don't need like a whole ton of exposition or anything like that.
Right.
Just like little by little as we go would be real nice.
Yeah. And I don't think this show seems to be a bit more, I don't want to say seems to be a bit more action focused, but it seems to have a lot of action and a lot of activity. So I don't know if the characters will have as much time to, you know, meditate and philosophize as they normally would. But I do think we'll get something. So, yeah, to Joe's point, it may not be quite as much as, like, you know, Yoda's teachings on Dagobah, but we'll definitely get something. So,
let me ask you guys something real quick, because maybe I'm misremembering this. Both of you guys have read an okay amount of High Republic stuff, right?
Oh, yeah. Jason's read more than I have. Okay. I kind of gave up at the start of phase two. So I haven't touched really since then. But yeah,
I've done all of phase one, and I think I've got all of phase two. Okay. I just haven't started phase three yet.
Okay. And it's three phases?
Yeah, the Correct. Third phase will be the final one.
So who other than Yoda and I guess Seattle are around right now that we already know from the prequels? Is there anyone else? Or is
Master Sanube. Yes,
Terra Sanube.
Yeah. No way! Yep. That's awesome. Yeah, God, I hope we get it.
Yeah. He's on the Jedi Council in the High Republic.
My God. No, yes. We need a Jedi Council scene now. I don't care. I will and riot if we don't see live action Terra Sanube alive this time.
Yeah, right.
Kenobi.
Kenobi killed him. Right.
Yes, we just have to slow down, or you're not going to find what you're looking for.
So, but yes, Terra Sanube.
Yariel Poof as well.
The
guy Yariel with the Q-tip head from Phantom Menace.
The Q-tip guy, right?
The one who needs to be careful around ceiling fans because those will kill him.
And then the only High Republic character from the book series that's in the show is Vernestra Rowe, which is she's the green. I always want to say Mary Allen. Thanks. I always want to say Melruyan. Darn it. Whatever that fruit is they're looking for in Rebels.
Melruyan.
Yeah.
I can't even say that word. Vernestra Rowe is the only High Republic book character specific to the books that is going to be in the show.
She was like 15 when the series started.
Yeah, so. when we first meet her, she's in the first middle grade book, A Test of Courage, which is actually one of my favorite books of the High Republic. It's really, really fun. She's a very young, just recently promoted Jedi Knight. She's one of the youngest people to ever be promoted to Jedi Knight. I think those will be the only recognizable characters. And I think that's the right choice. I think focusing on new characters is the right way to go. And like you said, I would definitely love a scene in the Jedi Council where we got to see those familiar faces. I think that'd be really fun. They'd make great cameos. But I think the story is going to be about these new characters, which is, I think, the right way to go.
Oh yeah. Yeah, for sure.
I will say when they're calling out in that opening scene, when he's asking them what they feel like when they're meditating there in the Force and, you know, peace, balance, and I want the girl sees fire. It also reminded me a little bit of one of my favorite scenes in the first High Republic book, Light of the Jedi, when we have Avar Chris, who's kind of the head main character of that book. If you can say there's a main character, that's one of my big issues with High Republic. There's 8 million characters. there's this great scene where she kind of does like a Force mind meld with all the other Jedi across the galaxy. And you kind of get into the heads of all these different Jedis and get a quick sense of how they see the Force. So I just thought that was like kind of a cool, even like homage to that aspect of like each Jedi has a different way of experiencing and talking about what the Force is to them. So I thought that was like a cool way of reminding us of that, like really great moment from High Republic.
Yeah. Although I think that scene with the, you know, fire, that's more like something ominous on the horizon for whatever is coming. So narratively speaking,
sure.
But I don't know. We'll see what happens in the scene. Obviously we just got like, you know, 3 seconds of it, but I will say Master Soul. I do agree with your, he does have some Qui-Gon vibes about him for sure. But my favorite shot of him in this trailer, it's towards the end ish. Well, it's like about the minute mark, just after like minute 3, is when he faces off with Mei and he just uses the Force to stop her foot from like kicking him in the face. And it's like she's like trying to kick him and it's her foot is like stopped right next to his head. And he just sort of looks at her and her eyes go wide. I'm like, yep, that's a Jedi Master right there. He's going to be cool. I already like him a lot. So,
yeah, I mean, again, Leslie Headland said in that interview released that part of the inspiration behind the action choreography of this story is her love for martial art and kung fu movies, and specifically ones around wushu. And wushu is a Chinese form of martial art, which if any of you have ever watched the Ip Man movies, which I think is Jet Li.
Donnie Yen, man.
Donnie Yen, that's right. Yeah, Yen. From Rogue One, duh. But yeah, those are, he's trained, that's all wushu style of martial art. And there's a lot of wire work in those martial art movies and stories. Mm. So we definitely see some of that here in this shot. So it's cool that, you know, they're bringing in like in a whole new type of fight choreography, just like they did with what's his bucket for the prequels. Why am I blanking on Nick Gillard? Thank you. Yeah. Nick Gillard, you know, kind of giving us a whole new sword fighting style. Now we're getting kind of a cool hand to hand fighting style that's focused in like ancient Chinese wushu martial arts, which is really cool.
Yeah, I'm super excited. I love this stuff. Like I wish people could see this because I literally am. I feel like I'm vibrating a little bit. so yeah, I'm really excited with some of this really cool Jedi action that we're getting just in this trailer. I'm also very, very concerned about Carrie Ann Ross, because, you know, we have that in that encounter that she has with Mei in the trailer. And of course, that's when they kind of start telling us in the trailer that there's someone going around killing Jedi. So my concern is that she's going to be the big name that gets killed.
Oh, man.
The big name in the Jedi Order that gets killed and
starts the investigation.
Yes, exactly. Starts the investigation. So I'm concerned about her. Yeah. Even though that shot of her like Force pushing Mei back is also one of the coolest shots in the trailer. So
yeah. He also there's a scene where it looks like she's investigating something with several other Jedi.
Yep.
So
okay.
It's possible she's not gonna, but like at the same time, I've tried to see those other Jedi, and I think one or two of them might be the ones that are fighting with Master Soul at the end. So, like, I'm really worried. You could be right. I gotta check those shots again. But I am a little concerned because she's my biggest draw. Like when I heard she was gonna be in this and she was gonna be a Jedi Master, I was just like, oh my god, Trinity! Like Carrie Ann Moss has that confident grace that deliberateness, that like self-confidence. You know what I mean? Like, she's like, of course she would make a great Jedi Master. Like, this is like a match made in heaven. This is perfect. So I'm now I'm scared.
I'm sorry. I don't mean to scare you, man. But I have a bad feeling about this. I'm sorry. I had to do it. I just want to prepare myself so that if she does survive, I will be very happy and relieved. So,
yeah. And of course, she is famous for being in the Matrix films. And her character's name is Master Indara. And I love that first shot of her kind of standing off, you know, with her hood up, and seems to be almost like she's not, like you said, Joe, she's kind of like in an investigation mode. So, kind of like Quinlan Vos being undercover in Mos Espa there in Phantom Menace. Always loved that little cameo. So, you know, she's just standing in for Quinlan Vos 100 years in advance. No big deal.
Right. Right.
That's it. And the show has been described as, I think, like a spy thriller or something. So, or like a mystery,
a mystery thriller.
Quick, let's talk about that. Yeah. You know, we've never real quick. I want to reference something. Jason, when I was out hanging out with you the other week, we got a moment there to meet up with, you know, friend, Kyle, as we call him here, Kyle Baca, because he's 8,000 feet tall. I think he's in this as that Wookiee Jedi. Or at least I hope that's Kyle. But when we were hanging out with Kyle there for a minute, of course, Kyle of The Saga Continues, another Thunderquack podcast show. And Joe, a regular, I know you guys do stuff together all the time with Rebel Cells. But Kyle said something really awesome when we were hanging out with him that day at the collector's market. And he just said, you know, we were talking briefly about Andor, and you know, I'm just not nuts about Andor. It's not my cup of tea. I respect it as a great show, but it never felt like Star Wars to me. But I loved how what Kyle said was, yeah, but I really liked how it got to be something totally different. And I like that Star Wars can now be lots of different things. And that means that some people are going to really love things more than others. And I was like, that's a really great point. Like, you know, again, we have to allow Star Wars to sometimes change and take different shapes. So Andor was a very particular type of story. It's not one that I want more of anytime soon, but if they keep making them, great, because there's so many people that love it. And I think this being a different kind of show, like Mandalorian, especially season one, is very much a Western. Ahsoka is kind of like an adventure quest. You know, it almost felt like a D&D campaign. Each episode like just builds on the campaign. And now this is a mystery thriller. So, you know, another new type of genre for Star Wars. How does that sit with you, Joe?
Yeah, I'm excited. I mean, the fact that we're getting a mystery thriller, even though, so it's so funny because like some of my favorite stuff from the prequels is just Obi-Wan sneaking around and investigating things. Yeah. And like we're in every movie, all three movies, Obi-Wan's doing it, and it's awesome. And I don't know what it is. I just like Obi-Wan solving mysteries. For him, it's just like another day in the life of. It's like Tuesday, but
Detective Kenobi.
Yeah.
He's got an unofficial license, you know.
Exactly. So like, I don't know. I'm excited.
Kenobi, Private Eye. Sorry.
No, you're good. You're good. It's just, it's cool. It's cool that we're getting a new genre in Star Wars. It's cool that, you know, I've always been of the notion that like Star Wars doesn't need to be the same all the time. And I think animation proves that, right? Like animation is so different from live action. And like, think of how much Star Wars has been enriched because we added animation to, you know, the Star Wars palette. Mm-hmm. And I think the genre is the same thing. Like I would love to see horror. Like I love the Death Troopers novel. It's horror Star Wars. I would love to see horror TV shows or films or whatever in the Star Wars universe. I think there's no reason not to, other than like, you know, well, maybe not horror because we want to protect the brand and it's a very kid-friendly brand. But like, those are my feelings where it's just like, you can have all of the important elements that make Star Wars Star Wars and still like explore, you know, different writers and creators' visions for Star Wars. Ha ha, Star Wars vision. But you know what I mean? Like it's like a breath of fresh air. It's cool. Like even if it's not good and we feel like, oh, it doesn't work, I respect more when they try to do something new and fresh and it doesn't work, then just always sticking to the exact, like, connect the dots, paint by numbers formula. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? I'm really pumped. And I hope this is popular, because I think that would encourage them to take more risks with different genres that they might not have considered before now. So, Jason, what about you?
No, I'm totally on board with the idea of it being a mystery thriller. That's more my speed in terms of genre. And it's interesting because they're sort of titling it as a mystery thriller, but it's also, you know, space fantasy that we have, you know, because it's Star Wars. It's also sort of a kung fu action movie, which I also love. I'm a huge fan of mysteries. Like the first book series I was reading as a kid consistently was the Hardy Boys, you know. And don't get me started on how many British murder mysteries I've seen over the years. So all of this has elements and flavors of genres that I really like. So mixing them all together with, you know, lightsabers and Wookiees seems like a good idea to me. It'll just come down to the execution, I think. So this is definitely going to be like Carl. I think this is definitely going to be more in my flavor wheelhouse than Andor was. So I'm really hopeful and really looking forward to it in that respect. I'm okay with it. And like you said, they're giving us the mystery thriller, but they also kind of dip their toes in that a little bit with some of the prequels, with Detective Kenobi running around and sneaking. So it's not like it's an unknown quantity for Star Wars, you know, kind of trying to figure out what's going on. Mm-hmm. So it's they're just exploring it more fully, I think, than we've ever really done before. It's more the premise than the delivery mechanism. So.
Mm. Oh, my God. I just realized he does it in A New Hope, too. He sneaks around the Death Star. There are alternatives to fighting you guys.
Obi-Wan Kenobi is the angel on Batman's shoulder.
Yeah.
There you go.
But great points about, you know, Jason, how we do see it in the prequels, but they're making it very clear that this will be a darker tone. It's everything about the prequels is kind of lighthearted, even, I mean, except for Revenge of the Sith. There's an intentionality now with some of the newer Star Wars projects where they want to make it dark. And I think that can sometimes like be annoying, but I think what they're really just aiming for is it's just a little bit more adult, but not rated R adult, right? I don't think it's like they're going to go as dark as something like Game of Thrones or anything like that.
No,
but there will be a more serious tone to it. And I think that'll also be a cool way to examine the Jedi as well. Even in the prequels, there's something about the Jedi that to me makes them always feel a little bit hands off. You know, none of them feel that personal except for Qui-Gon. And then eventually Obi-Wan because of Anakin. Anakin is understandably the main character of the prequel stories. He is kind of our window into that world. And what is his relationship to the Jedi? Well, it's one of constant distance, really. It's a very sterile one. It's one where he has to always be kind of prim and proper. So I think this is an opportunity to see possibly an even more down-to-earth type of Jedi. Again, because to me, they've sort of always been hands-off. This is the type of story that we're going to kind of get put our hands on, you know? So let's touch some Jedi, boys.
Appropriately and with consent.
Right, of course.
Always.
Of course.
Carl, I I'm pretty sure you're right. It is going to be a lot more adult. I mean, just look at the poster that they released yesterday, right? I don't think this is going to be super edgy, bloody all the time, but like they literally use the imagery of smeared blood as the red blade of a lightsaber. Mm-hmm. So yeah. Like that's kind of setting the tone right there that like this is going to be, even if it's not like edgelord dark, it is still going to be, I think, more intense and a little heavier in tone than maybe we're normally used to, which is cool. It's gonna, I think it would fit. And I think, you know, I know, well, okay, so let me ask you your feelings about Andor, because for me Andor doesn't feel like Star Wars because of how dark it is. It's for me Andor is just like so on the like everything's hopeless and we're so desperate and like everything's going right. And like I understand Star Wars has always been a story about like the underdog and you know fighting the machine and fighting injustice and overwhelming odds and all that stuff, but like Andor is just like sad. Like you always feel sad after an episode of Andor, you know what I mean? So for me, that's why it doesn't feel like Star Wars. It's really nothing else. I really don't have the problem where they're like, I mean, I wish there were more aliens and like, especially like classic trilogy and prequel aliens. So it would just feel more like lived in universe, but just like, I do think there needs to be a hint of hope in whatever Star Wars you're making. So what exactly is it about Andor that's like not feeling like Star Wars for you?
You know, so
whichever.
I don't want to go down this too long because we're here to talk about Acolyte. But yeah, it's very similar to what you said, Joe. It just there's just such a sense of despair in that show that I think is counterintuitive to how I understand Star Wars. I get it. Like, I get that there it has to start there to show us where it's going. I get that it's really hammering home just how scary the Empire is. I get all that. I'm not saying that it's not executed well. It's just Star Wars at its core is always about hope. I mean, for a while there, it was almost like Disney Star Wars wouldn't shut up about it. You know, I mean, I think the hope is probably said 100 times in Rogue One. That said, it's Andor had such a despairing outlook on things that it just felt counterintuitive to Star Wars. And it was so focused on being a direct interpretation of our current world that also made it feel far less mythical to me. It felt too much a reflection of our own world. And I understand that myths are reflections of our own world, but not that point on. Like that's really not true myth at its core. It's not a direct interpretation of the world in which you live. It's far more nuanced and generalized than that. That's what kind of just didn't work for me.
Now, let me kind of ask you, because we were all talking about before how like, oh, it's exciting, it's a new genre. Some genres are kind of a little devoid of hope. Like I mentioned before, I was excited for horror, but I'm thinking about it, I'm like, wait, but like, I feel like that would be hard to like have that like right amount of hope, but still drive everything and have this like overwhelming sense of, you know, dread and horror and stuff. Well, see, now I just want Darth Vader like chasing everybody and killing everybody, like a fight of the.
Well, the thing with horror though is that, you know, at the end, someone always, you know, at least, you know, maybe not always, but, you know, at the end, someone usually gets out. Mm-hmm. Someone usually is able to get away. They stop the bad guy, the monster for now, at least, you know, cause you know, they sort of rinse, wash and repeat these villains in some of these horror series right now. They die, but not really. So, you know, there is a conclusion that can be hopeful or at least a breath of, or at least a release, you know, some sort of, you know, oh, we made it at least. You know, even if the future isn't certain, for now it's okay,
right?
And I think I agree with Carl to some extent about Andor is that we don't get any of that in Andor. Is that, you know, except maybe at the very end with like the uprising there. But even then, it's like, well, you know, the uprising happens and our heroes get away, but the, you know, the planet's just going to get squashed by the Empire. Yeah. You know, that's sort of like where we leave it. So it's like there's no real sense of release, no real sense of relief.
Yeah, catharsis.
I think catharsis. Yeah. And we need something like that. You know, even if the whole overall arc, we're still pushing towards, you know, the rise of the Empire, and we need to see that happen in order to have the rebels, you know, have their victory in the OT be as impactful as it is. It's just so down in the dirt that it's like Jin, she stops looking up. I feel like the whole series is that attitude. At least for now. Season two could change that. And I hope it does. And that's sort of been my optimistic feeling about Andor anyways, is that, you know, maybe there is some light at the end of the tunnel. We're just not far enough through the tunnel yet to see it. But we'll see. As far as the Acolyte is concerned, I do think it's going to be a darker tone, but there's still light. There's still, you know, obviously it's, there's still light because we've got the Jedi out there. They're, you know, doing their thing. They're not going to be perfect. They're going to make mistakes. The main character is someone, and I think a lot of what they're talking about with it being a darker tone is going to revolve around the fact that it seems like the main character technically is a villain, or at least someone who is being used by the villains. It's technically bad, if you will, you know, on paper, is that's what it looks like. And I think that's part of where the darker tone that they're talking about with this series might be coming from, because we're getting in the head of the underdog being on paper the bad guys and the institution being the Jedi. That's Leslie Headland says that in her interview on StarWars.com. You know, that's sort of the idea that she wanted to play with, is that the institution is the Jedi, but they're the good guys and the underdog is the bad guys this time. And so how do you play with that? And we'll see how the how it's executed and what the ultimate story ends up being. But I think that's going to be part of where the darker tone to this story comes from, is that we're really going to be sitting in the darkness with a lot of the main character throughout the series. Now, I did have a question I wanted to run by you guys, because everything about this is you know, the Acolyte that we've talked, you know, we've heard about is the Acolyte, some sort of dark side force user. We've never heard anything about them being a Sith at all. And then we end the trailer with a freaking red lightsaber. What do you think that's all about?
Carl, go for it, so that you don't have to say, yeah, me too.
Oh, man, come on. I got to think of something.
Do you need a second or
no? I'm good. I feel like there has been the language around, though, that this is the story about the Sith. It's about their kind of imminent return leading up to the Skywalker saga. So I do, in fact, think that that red lightsaber will belong to either the Sith, who's, you know, behind everything here in a way, or the Acolyte themselves, who's joined forces with this Sith. So, yeah, that's my thought, at least, is I do, in fact, think that this will be some sort of Sith. Now, I want to shut up here in a second so Joe can respond. But that also has me wanting to ask you guys then, as a follow up to this, is if, in fact, this is a Sith and they are, in fact, going to fight Jedi, how do we make sense of Ki-Adi Mundi's exclamation in Phantom Menace that, you know, the Sith have been extinct for a millennium? So we'll come back to that question in a moment. But Joe, what do you think? Do you think that red lightsaber is a clear indication of the presence of the Sith?
Yeah, I think that red lightsaber is the person who is either manipulating or using the Acolyte for whatever Sith purposes. I think the Acolyte is going to be looked at by whoever the two Sith are right now, because there's always two, right? There's a master and apprentice. whoever those two are, the Dooku of those two, the Acolyte is going to be his Ventress. That's where my feelings are, where she's kind of a baby Sith in training.
I love it.
And what this guy wants is when the time comes, me and the Acolyte are going to kill my master. And then I'm going to be the Sith Lord. I'm going to be the Sith Master. That's where my like knee jerk reaction is going with that.
Yeah. I mean, that's what Vader's trying to do with Luke and Empire too, right?
Right. Yeah. 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 Exactly. So like, that's just what they do, right? They just try to screw each other over all the time. So I feel like, you know, it's possible that like the quote unquote Dooku of the whoever the two Sith are right now, like might not even be telling the master that like, oh yeah, I have this person on the side who's who I'm training and
she's just my bae named May.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, and let's be honest, timeline wise, that the Sith apprentice, the Sith, you know, the Dark Lord, who's not the master, could be Plagueis. Timeline wise, that could be Plagueis. So I'm just going to put that one out there. So we'll see what happens with that. But I think the saber is being wielded by May. That red saber is being wielded by May, because I think the Sith, I agree with you, they're probably pulling some strings, but they're doing so from the shadows, and May is causing chaos and distraction and destruction, whatever the ends are that they want, but she's the one doing it so that she's also the fall guy when it all goes bad. And that way the Sith can stay hidden and the Jedi don't know of their existence, because they think they solve the problem if they arrest or kill May, and, you know, solve the issue there, because they think it's, you know, whatever the real story is, everyone else that's not a Sith only sees up until whatever her motivations are, potentially with the witches or that sort of thing. So, I think that's part of what it is. I think she's wielding the red lightsaber now. If she's not, then I fear for any Jedi's life that is also in that scene.
So yeah, I was just gonna say one of the new characters introduced in this is again, I'm probably gonna butcher the name. It's Quemer or something. That's probably not Quimir. Quemer maybe. Whatever.
Quemer.
Yeah.
Quemer.
We're told that he's a whatever it is. But he's a smuggler who kind of tracks down ancient relics. So, you know, to the point, just kind of carrying off what you both were just saying, I really love your notion, Joe, of this being the Acolyte kind of being a Ventress type character. So not a formal Sith apprentice, but kind of an assassin for a Sith apprentice. And I'm wondering, you know, so if the Jedi, in fact, encounter this person, right, they encounter somebody with a red lightsaber, if they want to maintain that the Sith are still extinct, then it would make sense. They could easily just say like, oh, we're aware that there are smugglers out there that get their hands on ancient Sith weapons and relics. Right. So it could be somebody who's just using something like that. And they quickly ascertain like, oh, this is no Sith sort of a thing. Or, you know, as that shot plays out. I think it's such a cool closing shot where they, you know, we don't know if they're seeing that lightsaber. In fact, we don't know, right? The way they put trailers together is obviously to create excitement and tension for a preview audience. But whatever they see, the way they whip out their lightsabers and go into action, it just makes me think of that shot in the Geonosis Arena battle, right? In Attack of the Clones, where they're all just running at the battle droids. But whatever it is that causes them to go into action like that, we then immediately see them thrown back by some sort of groundbreaking force. So whether it's the force itself being wielded by someone, or in fact, maybe they're just a big bomb hits and causes something, we don't know. But whatever is there that's hunting them and killing them, you know, this show is setting up that they're going to be overwhelmed by it in some capacity. And I love that this you know, it teases that what they're kind of investigating is so one of the new Jedi Padawan in the trailer, Yard is his name, or Yord, excuse me. He's the guy who looks like he kind of got beat up and says, you know, there's somebody's killing Jedi. I don't know why, or something along those lines. We're told on StarWars.com that he's a rule follower. He is someone who very much follows the code and the dogma of the Jedi. You know, he's kind of an Obi-Wan of Episode One times, or a Mace Windu of all times. And I think like having a character like that will be cool, because what if, in fact, you know, I'm sure the Jedi's initial thought isn't the Sith are back and they're hunting us down. I'm sure it's simply somebody out there who's quite powerful is killing Jedi. And I feel like a character like Yord there would probably be like, well, I don't get it. Everybody loves us. Why would anybody want to kill us? Right. Like this kind of like foolish notion that everyone in the galaxy loves the Jedi, maybe just completely blind to the fact that there are people that don't. And that's something certainly very clear in the High Republic time, you know, is the whole use of the Nihil, is that it's these group of people that really rally around the fact that they hate Jedi. So, you know, I'm curious to see how that will all go. And, you know, that there are Jedi being hunted down and killed. Man, what do you guys think of that?
You're killing me, man, because so while you were saying all that, I was kind of piecing stuff together, and it makes me think that it's really the Acolyte is not the one holding that lightsaber, man, because when she was fighting, you know, Jedi Master Carrie Ann Moss, Carrie Ann Moss was like, you know, having no problem with her. Master Soul was having no problem with her. They were using the Force and she was like, whoa, you're stopping my kicks. But then meanwhile, like, what, 5-6 Jedi Masters at the end are freaking out because they're overwhelmed by something. I don't think it's gonna be the Acolyte. It's just, it has to be something way more powerful. I think it definitely lends to the notion of what Jason was saying, was that I think the Sith are going around and they're the ones killing people. I think the Acolyte is going to be the Fall Guy, because now the Fall Guy is like attacking these other Jedi, and they're like, why are you killing Jedi? And she's going to be like, I don't know what you're talking about. I'm just killing you because of whatever manipulation that the Sith told me to just get you, because they knew that I was going to get caught and get my butt kicked. And then I think that's going to be the crux of it, is that the Sith are really pulling the strings. All the Sith have to do is not get caught. Anybody they kill, like, if they never figure it out that it's the Sith, like, that's it. They're still in the shadows. Like, the secret's safe. So that's I am now positive that the Acolyte is not wielding that lightsaber.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Like it. I like it.
I mean, the only thing I can think of is that she is wielding the lightsaber is that, you know, she killed one of the Jedi that she went out to kill. And they're like, well, here, let's upgrade your weapons so that you can actually go against lightsabers, and they hand her a red lightsaber. That's the only thing I could think of.
Which, do you think they would make her like bleed her crystal, or is that like a Sith only thing?
I don't know.
She kills the Jedi and like, okay, this is your lightsaber now, but you have to make the crystal bleed or whatever.
That would be cool. That would be really
be cool to see in live action. Yeah.
I would love that.
That'd be awesome.
Yeah, I would love that. But yeah, I mean, we do get a shot when Yord is talking about someone who's going around killing Jedi. There is a shot of her with her knives, you know, stabbing somebody.
Well, so who looks to be in Jedi robes.
It looks like it cuts out before it actually lands, though.
Right.
I mean, it does. But the implication is that, yeah, she kills whoever this is.
I think this is a red herring, man. I really don't think she's going to be the one to assassinate any Jedi. I think someone is running around assassinating Jedi, and then they send her once the Jedi are aware that someone's assassinating Jedi. The Jedi catch her thinking, hey, you're the one who did it. Cut it out. Like, I don't know. That's where my head's going. I feel like it's a red herring. I don't know what it is. Something about it is telling me.
No.
It's not this cut and dry.
Stop it, May. Stop it.
Cut it out.
Cut it out. I don't know. That's a great call there. We'll see. We only have to wait a few months.
True.
Just like June.
I will deny ever saying this in 3 months when I am inevitably wrong. I didn't say that. What are you talking about? I will just gaslight everyone. I never said anything like that.
Sorry, Joe. We have audio evidence.
that doesn't stop some people from keeping their beliefs. But anyway,
all too true.
But yes,
yeah. Go ahead, Jason.
I don't know. I don't know where I was going to say what I was going to say next. But yeah, no, I don't know. I think the only other thing I was really wanting to mention in the trailer is that we got friggin' Yunusu Otamo as Kel Naka, the Wookiee Jedi. It's going to be really awesome to have just a Wookiee Jedi on screen. We've got him in books. We've got him in comics before. But like, I really want to see what Kel Naka can do with a lightsaber in live action. I can't wait to see the choreography of that action scene. Just going to put that out there right now.
Yeah, that I loved the quick shot we get of him. And then we see him in one of the other shots where there's a couple of the Jedi being led by Carrie Ann Moss's character. We see him standing there in the back in more formal robes. But his character description on StarWars.com today simply says that he's a loner Jedi who's kind of out on his own doing his own thing. I'm really excited to meet a character like that and spend some time with him. We were introduced to lots of different type of Jedi in High Republic, and I really liked that. You know, we have the Wayseekers who kind of go out on their own and seek the will of the Force. You know, while they're technically Jedi and they are part of the Jedi Order, there's this tremendous freedom that they have. So I would love that he's kind of in a role like that. He's this Wayseeker who's just out doing his own thing. So I'm excited to see a character like that. And I love that it's a Wookiee. Like you said, Jason, for all the very same reasons. We had Buriaga in the High Republic, you know, a Jedi Wookiee Padawan who's a great character. So it'd be great to have, you know, it's going to be great to see one in live action. And I love that it's Yonas. He loves being in Star Wars. You know, he's such a lovely person. So him getting more opportunities just makes me delighted.
I want to see like Wookiees are strong when they're not Force sensitive. I want to see this guy demolish a building. Like, I want to see this guy go ham. I can't wait.
Wookiee Force Roar, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Oh my god, that's a video game. We need that video game. Come on,
that's like your power up. Yeah,
the Wookiee Unleashed. Let's go. Done.
Oh man,
sell it, market it right now. Trademarked Joe Hogan.
I'm sure they'll let me do that. no pushback at all whatsoever.
There's just a couple other things I wanted to hit real quick, and this does not have to do directly with the trailer, but again, that great interview that came out today with Leslie Headland, and I just was really delighted to see that she is in, most specifically, our age range, Joe. So Jason, look it up. She's 44 years old. So she's a little bit older than you and I, Joe. Well, and a little bit older than you, Jason. But she references a lot in her interview that she is a child of the EU era of the 90s. Like, she loves those books. She loves those stories. You know, her first early Star Wars memories are seeing the special editions, just like all of ours.
That's awesome.
Joe, you and I grew up watching the originals on VHS for a couple of years before that. But you know, so,
but that was the first theater experience.
Exactly. Yeah.
Wars. Yeah.
So I just made, she's very poignant about, there's so many things she loved in the EU and she put them in there, and just cause she was like, I'm going to just try it. And they let her keep them in there. So I'm just really excited to see what elements of the EU lore she's going to bring in here. As someone who grew up in that period of, you know, the mid to late 90s, where so much of my Star Wars stories were consumed by those EU books, I love anybody who wants to kind of give points and nods to that, you know, that always delights me. You know, I imagine that is probably exciting to you too, Joe, because I know you also loved that era.
Oh yeah. I'm psyched. I don't know if I'm going to pick up on everything. But just the fact that it's in her, like in the back of her head, and she's, you know, she's thinking about that stuff and incorporating what she can. I'm just excited that we have a creator that kind of, you know, it's not that we haven't before, but it's always nice to hear when, like, a new creator comes to Star Wars with respect for what came before. And again, like, doesn't want to just recycle all the old stuff, but still wants that connect, like, the connective tissue is important to them. You know what I mean? So it's just, it's nice. It's exciting. You know, I'm going to try not to get my hopes up and put any expectations on what that might mean. But I am excited for the, you know, what that might bring.
Yeah.
Yeah. In response to some of this conversation in the interview, she says that the series is also going to be introducing a Zygerian Jedi Master. A Zygerian Jedi. And of course, for anybody who doesn't know, the Zygerians are the slavers from the Clone Wars that were capturing the Togruta, and Anakin had a really bad time dealing with them. Plus canonizing one species that has yet to be seen. Which means it's a species that was seen in the old expanded universe that has not been brought into any of the new series or books.
Let it be the Oh gosh.
It's Jackson.
Oh, the rabbit.
It's Jackson. It's Jackson.
Well, he was in Clone Wars, or at least the skeleton of his type was in Clone Wars. So
oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, it's Sunny Day in the Void. That's why you don't know.
Oh, okay.
Yep, that's the skeleton that the droids run across in the old downed ship.
Yeah, that's an episode I've seen once. So yeah, that would be, I would not have recognized it.
But isn't that Gregor's episode? That's like, as soon as Gregor shows up, it's like, yeah, this episode's great.
Right, but he was in there for like five. Well, no, that was the episode after. So
really?
Yes, because they had the whole wand. Like, there was an episode of them all wandering, The next episode was was Gregor showing up. So,
wow.
Sorry.
Yeah. No. Yeah, I love that. These are the types of episodes that you love, Jason. That makes me so happy.
I just remember it because the droids were in it, and I thought it was hilarious that they had Jackson in there because I read like some of the old Marvel comics where he was in there, and I always thought it was the most ridiculous thing having a giant green Bugs Bunny running around. But you know, there he is, or at least a skeleton of his species. So
those the fans who are a little bit older than us still, like the EU, the kids that grew up in the 70s and 80s with the originals and were reading those Marvel comics, I know they have such a soft spot for Jackson, but you know, for me, it's just like, I don't care. that was one thing. Actually, just thinking of Jackson made me think of, with Kalnaka, he, again, this notion that he's a Jedi who's choosing a more solitary life. What that made me think of too is one of my favorite characters from the Ewok films, Tuka Truk, who's in Caravan of Courage. He is this Ewok who lives kind of in the woods by himself. He's kind of a self-sufficient Ewok. He's not part of Bright Tree Village, even though he's revered by the people of the village. And they have to recruit him to go on their courage quest. So I was like, ooh, is Kalnaka going to be like kind of a cool new version of Tuka Truk from Caravan of Courage, that classic Ewok movie? I'm here for it. But I want to close this with y'all just by asking the big question. Well, I shouldn't say the big question. I'm sure there's lots of big questions, but one of my big questions, again, just thinking about the timeline, and you already alluded to this once, Jason, you know, we know that this is essentially about 100 years before Phantom Menace. Mm-hmm. So what is the likelihood that Plagueis will play a role in all of this? You know, Jason, you referenced this a few minutes ago, and just curious, you know, do we think we might actually get a glimpse of a live action Plagueis? And would you want that? Do you even want that?
To quote K2SO, it's high, it's very high, the likelihood. I think it's likely. The timeline makes sense to have Plagueis being at least one of the Sith around at this point. I think Palpatine's it's a little early for him, but Plagueis is immune, and who knows, they could be another long-lived species, but it's also, you know, he could be younger, who knows, but I think it's likely that he would be around at this time period. Now, whether or not he shows up is another matter. I think it's likely, though. I think it's more likely than not, I will say that. I don't know how likely it is, but I think it's more likely than not. And do I want that? Absolutely. I would love to hear a story about Darth Plagueis the Wise, and actually see Darth Plagueis before he was wise, maybe. but yeah, yes, if we are given the option to have Darth Plagueis show up in this, then I am 100% here for it. So,
yeah. By you, Joe.
What about you, Joe?
I mean, I would love it. But I feel like if we are going to get it, I'm thinking this is going to be like, you know, almost like the end of an MCU movie and middle credits scene. Everything's done. The Jedi are okay. But then we see that who's still left behind. And it's going to be, we're going to find out that this apprentice Sith, who is now by himself, is going to be Darth Tenebris, and he's going to meet a young Mune or something. I don't know. And then it's going to be like, oh, it's an implication that, like, that's Plagueis, and, like, it was Tenebris all along, and it was Agatha all along. And that's my theory. I'm not basing it off of anything. I feel like, if anything, he's going to be a tease. I don't think he's going to be an important part of the actual story, but I think we could get a lot more Tenebris, his master. So,
And for those wondering, Tenebris was Plagueis's master from the Darth Plagueis novel. So, who is a Bith, by the way, at least in the novel?
A Bith Sith, baby.
A Bith Sith, baby.
Yes.
Let's do it.
What's a Bith?
Yeah.
Revenge of the Bith.
You know, honestly, that's what I was thinking. One of the things I also thought after watching the trailer a couple of times today, I was like, man, this has given me some like really cool, like mysterious Sithy vibes, and makes me kind of want to revisit the old James Luceno Darth Plagueis novel, which I very well may do before June 4th, just to kind of get myself in a Sithy space.
Or you read 87 books a week. I'm sure you can squeeze in Plagueis between now and then.
I'll find time. But actually, no, there's one last question. And Jason, I want to ask this to you, not to exclude you, Joe, but I know you haven't done High Republic, and this is kind of an explicitly High Republic question. But with that character, Mother Anissa, I do love her kind of voiceover talking about, it's not about who's good or bad, but who's allowed to use power, right? So my quick side tangent, I like this because, again, as you referenced earlier, Jason, Leslie Headland in her interview talked about one of her favorite themes in Star Wars is the story of the institution versus the underdog, which that is A New Hope. It's the massive Star Destroyer swallowing up the little Republic, you know, cruiser. This has always been the story about the underdog rising up against this institutional power. And she makes it explicit, like the Jedi are the institution here. So while they are, culturally, as Star Wars fans, we know the Jedi to be the good guys. And also in this story, the underdog is going to be battling against them. So it kind of plays with that notion in a new way, which I think is really interesting and can be really exciting. But my question then specifically about this character who kind of insinuates that with the line, Mother Anissa, that there's something about that, it's not a tattoo per se, but the kind of bejeweled like forehead thing she's wearing. It reminds me of the open hand, perhaps, Jason, you know, from High Republic. Is that a symbol of theirs? I can't quite remember. Does that ring any bells for you?
No, I don't think so.
Okay.
No, the open hand was more like waves, and then that turned into the lightning bolts of the Nile.
That's right. Okay.
So, but it might be giving homage to that type of thing. I think what's more likely is that these are a different sect of Force witches, similar to the Night Sisters, maybe not quite as necrotic. You know, I don't think we're going to have zombies running around with these witches. But my guess is that they're trying to operate, and whatever it is they're doing is causing them to bump up against the Jedi, and the Jedi might be trying to put a stop to whatever it is they're doing for whatever reason. I don't know. And that's probably where her comment about who has power and comes from, and who's allowed to use it. So, you know, we might be getting a larger discussion about, you know, who all is allowed to use the Force in this series, you know. And I think it's been very clear from a lot of the animation and other things like Rogue One that, you know, and you know, with the Church of the Jedi in The Force Awakens, that, you know, a lot of people can, you know, not use the Force, but have access to the Force, you know, not use the Force in the way the Jedi can, but have access to the Force and believe in the Force in various different ways. And, you know, who knows if she is a villain character, and I'm not 100% sold that she is. I think she's an antagonist to the Jedi in some way, but that doesn't mean she's a villain. You know, it'll all depend on the scenario, but, you know, she could be saying, you know, that is like, hey, you know, trying to reframe the argument and like, no, but you're actually harming people. You know, that could be it. I don't know. Or she could have a legitimate reason for saying that. We'll just have to wait and see. But I think it's more going to turn into a discussion about who has the access to use the Force in the ways that they do, and whether or not the Jedi allow people to, you know, have that access and use the Force in the ways that they have in the past, kind of thing. I think that's more likely where the story is heading with them.
I like that. Yeah. I like that a lot, because the notion of who's allowed to use, like, what are you allowed to use the Force for, right? How are you allowed to use it? you know, if these are, you know, the Night Sisters, we've known, you know, since Dave kind of brought them into canon with Clone Wars stuff. I mean, they were first introduced in The Courtship of Princess Leia by Dave Wolverton back in 1995 or 4, whatever that book came out. But the Dathomirian Night Sisters were introduced there, and they ride Rancors, and they're awesome. so I love that there are more witches, and who obviously probably manipulate the Force in their own ways. So yeah, Jason, I love this notion of, could it be a question of, well, who's allowed to use the Force and how are you allowed to use the Force? Right.
Right.
Who's allowed access and what are you allowed to do with said access? So I love the notion, then the question that could then open up. So anyway,
my guess is that they probably use the Force in ways that are, let's put it, unorthodox.
For sure.
You know, that might put them in conflict with the Jedi somehow. But yeah. Anyway.
Yeah. But I think that's a good place to wrap this up for now. I think we've done lots of good speculating work, as is always exciting to do when a new Star Wars project is introduced. Before we close it up, though, Joe, if people want to interact with all your creative projects or the things you're involved with, how can folks follow you?
I think the easiest way is to just follow me on Instagram. It's just Joe Hogan Art.
Pretty straightforward.
Yeah, absolutely. And Carl, if people want to weigh in on some of their favorite moments from this trailer, any theories that they might have, where can people get in contact with us?
Yeah, we're also mostly on Instagram. You can follow us there at The Wampas Lair. You can follow us on Twitter at Wampas Lair, or you can always email us at wampaslairpodcast@gmail.com.
All right. Any final thoughts, gentlemen, before we close down this episode?
For light and life, baby.
I'm just happy we only have, like, just under 3 months to wait for this.
Same.
And that'll wrap up this episode of the Wampas Lair podcast. It's been episode number 550, The Acolyte Trailer. For Carl and Joe, I'm Jason, and we'll see you next time here in the Wampas Lair.